Warning, this podcast may contain explicit references to things that Jesus might have put up his butt.
Today's episode of The Scathing Atheist is brought to you by the new line of Catholic faux phylactics, Decepticondoms, DNA incubators from the makers of Kingdom Come perforated rubbers. So for the ladies out there having trouble maintaining those fruitful multiplication numbers or cursed with a husband that's way too socially responsible, don't race to the garbage can. Try Decepticondoms, specially incubated for successful unborn retrieval for up to 48 hours. And now, The Scathing Atheist.
Well, in Jesus' time, if two men decided they wanted to cohabit together, they would have been stoned to death. So Jesus would not have baked them a wedding cake, nor would he have made them a bed to sleep in.
This is John from Sin City, and your mom was knocked up by a filthy monkey man. Last call.
It's Thursday.
It's March 27th.
And everybody should know how to rip duct tape at this point. It's not that difficult.
I'm No Illusions.
I'm Heath Enright. And from Yankee Pot Roasting, New York, New York.
And Rebel Plot Boasting, Podunk, Georgia, this is The Scathing Atheist.
In this week's episode, Hobby Lobby's medical plan now covers opium tonic, leeches, and hysterectomies.
We'll give you this chocolate bar if you'll get in the van.
And we'll learn why lesbian Latinas that like to get stoned are exactly my type.
But first, the diatribe. As atheists, we don't get to imagine that post-mortem last laugh the way religious people do. Unfortunately, Fred Phelps never gets to realize how wrong he was because he's just dead. But it would be kind of nice to think of him waking up in some paradoxical non-afterlife and realizing that, nope, it wasn't God, he was just a bigoted sperm flake the whole time. But I don't bring his death up to celebrate or rejoice or beat off on his grave. Yes, the world's better off without that hate monger, and yes, I'm really happy that he died, but I'm not heartless. I feel sorry for his family like I would any family that lost somebody. I feel sorry for the media. They have to find some new mentally deranged fringe nutcase to raise to undeserved national notoriety now. But most of all, I feel sorry for all the people who email me and try to demonize our show because they have to find a new person to pretend that we obsess over and compare all religious people to. It's probably the single most common sentence in our critical feedback. All Christians aren't Fred Phelps. I actually got an email a couple of months ago that challenged me to go a whole episode without mentioning him. The truth is, of course, that we've done that 51 times in our first 57 episodes. We've never actually reported on anything that asshole did. In fact, he came up in the headlines exactly 3 times. Once when somebody turned the house across from his church into a gay pride flag, once when the head of the satanic temple turned his dead mom gay with sperm and lesbians, and once when a bassist fingered herself on his front lawn. Neither Heath nor I have ever said anything on this show that could be reasonably construed as a suggestion that Fred Phelps was a typical Christian. He was a xenophobic attention whore that wanted to be seen as the nemesis to the secular world and got his wish. He wasn't worth all the attention the mainstream media gave him. He wasn't worth all the rancor the secular movement invested in him. The only thing Fred Phelps was worth was 16 points in my celebrity death pool. But he was a Christian. And whether they like it or not, Christianity has stuck with him. It's not like this dude made up his own wacky religion or anything. He used the same wacky religion all the other Christians are using. And while his tactics were almost universally rejected, homophobia is hardly a fringe Christian belief. According to a 2012 Lifeway survey, 73% of evangelical Christians think homosexuality is a sin. Nearly three-quarters of them agree that God does indeed hate fags. And I think that's important to keep in mind when you see all the reluctant eulogies of the Westboro Patriarch. The op-eds are working overtime to try to distance Phelps' church from the rest of the Jesus-y folks. Almost every article I saw about his death pointed out that the Westboro Baptist Church wasn't a member of the Southern Baptist Convention or any other official Baptist group. But I haven't seen a single one put that in context by mentioning that most Baptist churches in this country aren't affiliated with the SBC or any other official Baptist group. They also all make sure to point out how small the church was. Oh, it only had 40 active members, 100 at its height. And again, they don't point out that the average Baptist church has about 125 members. And that's with the megachurches skewing the shit out of the numbers. Phelps' congregation was probably smack dab on the median. It was a regular church with a slightly irregular way of getting out its message. So why is everybody going to such great lengths to divorce him from the rest of his faith? You know, there aren't many bad things you could say about that dude that I take issue with, but for whatever it's worth, he was definitely devout. He was definitely religious. The fact is that any reasonable definition of Christianity has to include that mummified turd juggler Phelps. And unless you can convince yourself that he wasn't a true Scotsman, you gotta ask yourself which is true. Are Christian morals really that horrible? Or are one's morals independent of one's religion? And of course, if you're being honest with yourself, you'll realize that the answer is both.
They're talking about your Jesus.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Joining me for headlines tonight is anxious baseball fan Heath Enright. Heath, are you ready to play ball?
Yeah, well, I'm still enjoying the last 4 days. The Mets get to be above 500, though, so that's nice.
All right, fair enough. In our lead story tonight, the Supreme Court heard arguments on Tuesday in the case of Human Decency versus Hobby Lobby. The case revolves around the bafflingly controversial contraceptive mandate in the Affordable Care Act. Hobby Lobby is one of many corporations suing for a legal exemption from this mandate because they believe that contraceptives like IUDs and morning after pills cause abortions. The fact that they're wrong somehow doesn't end the bickering, so the Supreme Court got involved.
And the Bible doesn't ban contraceptives anyway. First of all, that would be impossible because unless the author was like omnipotent or something, he couldn't know about condoms thousands of years before they were invented. Second, the passage in Genesis that everybody harps on is talking about a dude who's supposed to bang his dead brother's widow, but he pulls out so he won't have to add another kid to his will. That's it. That's the whole story they're talking about. Nothing even remotely related to modern contraception. And the whole point of the story is that he finishes on her face for a selfish motive. The sin isn't the money shot in and of itself. It's the motive.
Right, and are they saying that you still have to fuck your dead brother's widow? I mean, what the hell? Now, one of the big issues in this case is whether a for-profit company has a religion and thus the right to freely exercise said religion. But Justice Sotomayor, who is pretty awesome for a Catholic, started things off by pointing out that this exemption could open the door to corporations refusing to pay for vaccines or blood transfusions on similar religious grounds. And it took a long time to get there, but eventually Justice Kennedy pointed out that employees also have rights.
Oh, yeah, good point. People are corporations, too. So, and in under-the-counter apologetics news, the Vatican is doing its best to explain why German customs seized 340 grams of cocaine packed into 14 condoms on its way from South America, bound for the Vatican post office via Leipzig, Germany.
Now, if Hobby Lobby gets its way, the packaging might be as valuable as the contents in this case.
Now, outraged at swirling accusations, an unnamed papal source may have made the following statement, quote, "We swear we would never have used those condoms," end quote. and honestly, they wouldn't have.
Yeah.
Anyway, Germany, Vatican City, South America, seriously, nobody, anything that bad is automatically suspicious. It's like their own little triangular trade, and against all odds, it might be more offensive. Instead of rum, sugar, and slaves, it looks like these guys are moving fugitive Nazis, condoms, and blow. So, you know, say what you will about the contraception and the tenets of National Socialism, the cocaine thing is pretty damning, so...
Andy worked in a Lebowski reference. Well done, sir. All around.
Do it again.
And in creepy people luring kids into their windowless van for Jesus news tonight, parents near the Gospel of God Baptist Church in Asheville, North Carolina, were assured by police that the wave of creepy men trying to lure neighborhood kids into their cars were only trying to rape the children's brains.
Oh, okay. That's nice.
Yeah.
At least they chose cars. That was a classy move. I mean, way less rapey than the van thing.
Right,
you know,
right.
As long as they weren't Volkswagens.
Yeah, very uncomfortable.
Because that's uncomfortable.
After several reports of men in suits coaxing children towards their cars, local police determined that the degenerate perverts in question were actually perverts for Jesus and were just trying to convince strangers' children that they would burn in hell eternally if they didn't get dunked in water by a shaman, which in some ways is better than trying to fuck them, I guess.
I suppose, yeah. Do they have good candy? At least fun size is bullshit. If I'm a kid and I'm risking an unmarked van situation, it better be the full-size fucking two-piece Twix bar. The very least.
That explains a lot.
Come on.
About you, actually. Now, Reverend Keith Shelton doesn't believe the church did anything wrong, but promises to review the policies and, quote, be real aware of how we approach kids that aren't in the presence of their parents, end quote. Apparently believing that there's a correct way to do that.
You can't. There's no. Don't ever.
Yes, that's the policy.
Wow. Moving on. In homicidal neckwear news, Sarah Palin spoke out publicly against the pro-choice cause and their latest campaign, which involves wearing miniature coat hanger necklaces.
Yes!
That's awesome.
Indeed. Perhaps unaware, she often wears a T-shaped murder reenactment necklace herself, or perhaps just plain special herself. Palin blasted anyone that would, quote, wear this symbol of death around their neck, end quote.
Wow. I've got just such a symbol of death for you, Mrs. Palin. It's called a garrote. anyway.
Considering...
I didn't actually mean that, Secret Service. Sorry.
Now, considering the stem cells for her terminated vice presidential run were used to create Paul Ryan in a lab, and, of course, her chromosomally endowed family, it seems like she would be at least a bit more receptive to prenatal selection. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, her family does look like it came from the dumpster behind Gattaca, so there's that.
That's what the eugenic... the ones they throw out, though, is what he means.
And in how long could it possibly take to say God did it news tonight, creationists are demanding equal time to counteract all the scientific facts Neil deGrasse Tyson keeps yammering on about in Cosmos. They argue that the engaging and accessible nature of the show is making it increasingly difficult for people not to laugh at how stupidly incorrect they are.
Exactly. What about the shitty design theory, the small boom theory? There are an infinite number of ways to be wrong about something, so it's literally impossible to give equal airtime to all of them. What are they even talking about?
Right. So, on a related note, we've got this really nice clock here. I have these 30 seconds I need to put somewhere, so 30 seconds on the clock. Titles for creationist documentaries. Go.
Oh, nice. Okay. Let There Be Spinal Tap.
Nice. How about Compost, a Space-Time Absurdity?
When We Were Two Kings, the boxing thing.
We could do like a weekly one, Myth Trusters.
Nice. All right. What about Global Forming, a Convenient Lie?
Well done, sir. Well done. All right. So Ken Burns had some success, so we're going to go Ken Ham's Drivel War.
Ah, I see what you did. Civil War. Yeah.
Yes.
Ken Ham's also behind Arcs and Recreation, right? That documentary style.
I believe he was.
Show.
How about The Bronze Age, the midpoint of geology?
What about the Old Testament graffiti artist West Banksy in Exit Through God's Gift Shop?
Oh, I got a good one. Commuting with Dinosaurs.
Nice. What about the Adams and Eve family? The Thin Jew Line. Incestin' Show.
Nice. Got a lot in there at the end.
The musical. Genesis the Musical. Incestin' Show. And finally tonight, in Plugging the Dyke with a Rock news, proud and hilarious New York City lesbian Jennifer Louise Lopez, or Jello, as I will now be calling her, completely baffled the bigots at ATLAH Worldwide Missionary Church in Harlem when she showed up to turn herself in for voluntary stoning, the proper biblical punishment for the horrible, beautiful lesbian sin she was born with. Now, at one point recently, the marquee outside the Worldwide Missionary Church read, quote, "Obama has released the homo demons on the black man. Look out, black woman. A white homo may take your man." I don't think that requires any further lampooning than the damage they've already done. But if you'd like to take a stab at the reasoning behind that I'd love to hear.
Yeah, what? Clearly the homo demons didn't come to this dimension for Caucasian-sized dick. They could have got that in hell.
Nice. Of course you had something there. Now, the sign was later replaced by, quote, "Jesus would stone homos. Stoning is still the law," end quote. So the intrepid Jello just showed up at the front door requesting her punishment. And the guy on duty got flustered, of course, because he didn't know where they kept the stoning kit or whatever. So he told her to come back the next day.
And now, I think it's worth pointing out that there's video of the incident, and it's pretty fucking funny if you haven't seen it. It's not exactly what I was looking for when I Googled lesbian punishment, but it was funny. It's worth watching. And I guess on that, we're going to put a fork in the headlines for the night. Heath, thanks as always for joining me.
Put a spork in me. I'm done with my famous bowl.
And when we come back, Lucinda will be back by popular request. Does this ever happen to you? Well, we can't help you with that, but what we can help you do is become an official Scathing Atheist patron at Patreon.com.
Patreon.com is a fantastic service that allows you to give us money easier than ever before. Signing up for as little as $1 an episode, you can sleep comfortably knowing that Noah won't have to give quite so many hand jobs for a bandwidth upgrade.
I'll still give just as many, but not because I have to.
Quality, not quantity, right?
Exactly, but that's not all. Scathing Atheist patrons also get a bevy of beneficial bonuses. You see, every week we record between 3 and 10 minutes of extra material that just ends up on the cutting room floor.
These never-before-released minutes include expletives, puns, and a litany of verbosely worded dick and fart jokes.
But these emission omissions can be yours when you become a Patreon patron. That's 10 to 30% more Scathing Atheist every week. How much would you pay?
$1 million!
But don't answer yet.
Sorry, that seemed like a logical time to answer.
But there's even more. You'll also get the show as soon as it's edited, rather than anxiously counting down the minutes until 8 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time.
That sounds too good to be true!
But it isn't. For just $1 per episode, you get the unedited director's cut of every new episode, and you get those episodes early. Plus, you get an outlandishly over-the-top compliment on the next episode.
But that's not all.
Actually, that is all.
For $1 per episode, sure, but you could give us more than that.
That's right, so. Ethan. The more you give, the more you get.
That's right, Noah. If you give $2 per episode, you also get a free digital copy of our new ebook, Diatribes Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope. Plus, an autographed drawing from the first ever illustrated Lucinda's Bible Stories for Kids.
But do I still get the over-the-top compliment, the longer episodes, and the earlier releases?
You do. But that's still not all.
That's right, because you can also give us even more money. If you donate at least $5 per episode, we'll also toss in a signed paperback copy of the new book, plus you'll get an advanced copy of all the new Scathing Atheist Presents books before they're available to the public.
So how can we be certain that you're not full of shit about this deal?
Well, I guess you'll just have to check out our Patreon page to see for yourself. That's patreon.com/scathingatheist.
It's easy to set up a recurring micropayment. Macro payments are equally easy. Enter your information once, and Patreon will bill your credit card or PayPal account once per month. You can even set up a limit in case you're afraid we'll release 106 episodes 1 month just to fuck you out of a lot of money.
And remember,
we wouldn't do that.
No, we wouldn't. And remember, if you were a Patreon patron, this segment would end with Heath saying turtle fucker 3 times in a funny voice. But if you're not, it just ends with me saying this sentence.
The Holy Babble.
Esther is the final of the historical books and really doesn't belong in the Bible at all. Perhaps the most controversial inclusion in the Old Testament, it was not generally accepted as an officially licensed Jew book until after much of the New Testament was written. It makes no mention of God, the main character is a woman, and it does absolutely nothing to advance the larger story arc of the book.
But it does fulfill the most basic requirement for a book of the Bible. A lot of people get unnecessarily murdered for not being Jews, so...
Right,
check.
Right. That's the important thing. So joining us to discuss this tale of debauchery and bloodthirsty vengeance is my lovely wife, Lucinda. Lucinda, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So what did you think of Esther?
It was weird. It was like the biblical version of some of those free ebooks on Smashwords that, you know, the one... Maybe it's just me. It was a story, but who really gives a shit?
Right.
You know?
But from a literary perspective, it was a little better than what we've come to expect. I mean, what is that? It's like being the least inflamed measle, but... So, why don't you start us off there, babe?
Sure, sure. The book starts with King Ahasuerus, the debaucherous, who decides to have a 6-month drunken banquet. At the end of this banquet, he orders his wife, Queen Vashti, to come in and show his guest how smoking hot she is.
You may not be dead on that pronunciation. Anyway, she refuses and causes a big scandal. Eventually, he banishes her and vows her to replace her with a new wife, a better wife.
Yeah, I'm going to call him Xerxes. Xerxes gets together a panel of the wisest men in the land And they all decide that allowing women to have the consent option on everyday commands, really slippery slope. That uppity bitch has got to go is the ultimate decision.
Yeah, yeah. So he puts together a sexy virgin squad to go find him all the best available poontane.
And then they have a 12-month beauty regimen they all have to go through before the king will fuck them. So whoever wrote this thing was clearly waiting for his wife to get ready when he did.
The king tries out all the virgins, but Esther is apparently a phenomenal fuck, so he makes her his queen.
And when deciding what sex toys to bring with her to please the king, she famously seeks the advice of the neutered gay sex slave that oversees the whore squad. So, smart move there. Yeah. Learn about the prostate right in time.
But, and this is important, she doesn't tell anybody she's Jewish. This will come up later.
Mm.
Right. Then Esther's cousin slash adoptive father, Mordecai, refuses to bow to the king, so his chief ass-kicker, Haman, decides to kill all of the Jews.
Yeah, but they publicly schedule their Holocaust. Yeah. The king's like, yeah, we're going to kill all the Jews on the 13th of next month, after the playoffs, when the playoffs are over.
Yeah, ethnic cleansing is best done by surprise. You know?
Right.
There wasn't anybody who anticipated that Inquisition by the Spaniards. So, yeah, all in one fell swoop.
Nobody ever expects it. So, Mordecai goes back to his cousin slash adopted daughter slash queen and says, little help.
You know, the dude you're banging just approved a Reich, I'm pretty sure. Could you please, with maybe the saving our chosen race, whenever you get a minute, not a huge deal.
She goes to the king and he says to her, whatever you want, I'll give it to you, even if it's half my kingdom. So instead of saying something along the lines of, I was hoping you could not murder all the Jews, she concocts this weird-ass plan that starts with inviting the king and Haman to a banquet before she'll tell them what she wants.
Yeah, because banquets in Esther are like buffets on a cruise ship. Every fucking time you turn around, these guys are having a 9-year banquet again.
Yeah. So Haman is all excited to get the exclusive invite, but he's so pissed about the Jews not trembling before him that he can't enjoy it. So he orders Mordecai hanged, or impaled.
Well, it's impaled in the NIV, but it's hanged in mine and Heath's.
Right.
So a little bit of a question there.
Yeah, so Haman's got the perfect gig as the king's number two. He's got land, bitches, a bunch of sons, doesn't care how many daughters, but he's still pissed about that unbowing Jew. So his friends have to comfort him. He has these bad days. You want a soda? No? You want to impale Mordecai on this 50-foot cubit pole that I got right here and then have a banquet? Okay, let's impale Mordecai on this 50-foot cubit pole right here and have a banquet.
So the king realizes that Mordecai helped him forestall an assassination attempt and wants to honor him. So he calls Haman into his room and he says, if I really wanted to honor the shit out of somebody, what should I do? And Haman, thinking the king is planning to honor Haman, goes off on this long list of awesome shit that includes some of the king's wardrobe, a horse, a parade, the whole nine. And then the king says, that's a great idea. Now go find that Jew that you hate and do that for him.
Yeah.
Worst day ever.
Yeah. And then they show up at the banquet, and the king says to Esther, so me and Haman are here like you asked. So now what did you want me to do again?
And by the way, if you were just selling us as sex slaves or something like that, I would never have bothered you about this as king. But you're talking full Holocaust now. So
go full Holocaust. So yeah, she actually does qualify her request
literally.
And then she says, kill Haman instead of all the Jews. That's what I wanted.
Yeah.
And the king goes, yeah, I can do that.
So they hang Haman or impel him on the pole he'd set up for Mordecai in a rare biblical use of literary competence.
Yeah, but they don't rescind the kill the Jews order.
No.
Instead, they issue a kill the people who are killing the Jews order, because why have no violence when you can multiply the violence? There can be violence and bloodshed for everyone.
It's the Bible, after all.
And also, important note here, the Jews can plunder now.
Yes.
That was in the fine print of chapter 8.
They
officially get to plunder their enemy's property from now on. So, you know, great lawyering to get this shenanigans book approved for the OT.
Don't call it that.
Then the king says, so I killed Haman and I let the Jews kill all the Babylonian Nazis, anything else? And she says, would you mind also hanging all of Haman's kids? And the king says, anything for you, Lolita. Esther.
Wow. A Nabokov reference. That's a highbrow pedophile reference in scathing atheist style. No, he does make a good point, though. Esther became queen at 14.
Yes.
Also, why aren't more biblical literalists banging 14-year-old virgin harem recruits? Seems to be a mitzvah right here in the Bible. Oh, because times change and living room by literal words of a book today would be cruel and tragic?
To be fair, though, there's probably a lot more biblical literalists banging 14-year-old virgin harem recruits than we realize.
True. But then they decide that they should celebrate this murderous rampage every year and call it Purim. And the book ends with Mordecai being declared the head Jew.
And as usual, they indignantly point out that this is all in the brochure of the Annals of the Kings of
right.
blah, 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 that we should have already read. So.
They're basically saying, why are you reading this shit? Now, this book is a real challenge to the whole notion that the Bible is inerrant, but it also splooges all over the notion that it has historical value as well. There was no King Ahasuerus or whatever. No. And there was no Queen Vashti. There was no Queen Esther. Nothing remotely like anything described in this book ever happened.
As opposed to the other books that contain shit that did happen?
Well, no, but I mean, they have, like, kings that existed. Anyway, so that's all for the babble for this three-week period. We're nearing the halfway point, guys, I promise.
Just nearing, though. We're not even there yet. Wow.
No, no, it's in Psalms, I believe. Anyway, thanks for joining me, as always.
Sephardic Jumanji.
Adu.
Before we fade to music tonight, I wanted to thank everybody who picked up a digital copy of our first book, The Scathing Atheist Presents Diatribes, Volume 1, 50 Essays from a Godless Misanthrope, which is available on Kindle stores or smashwords.com and should be available on ebook retailers across the interwebs by this time next week. Paperback copies are also on the way. We'll hope to have those available by the weekend of May 2nd. Why the weekend of May 2nd? Well, in case you forgot, Heath, Lucinda, and I will be attending ReasonCon just outside beautiful Asheville, North Carolina that weekend. The keynote speaker is Dr. Richard Carrier. They're also welcoming a host of other great speakers. It's free, and you still have time to adjust your plans accordingly. You'll find all the info on the show notes for this episode at scathingatheist.com. Of course, I need to thank John for this week's Farnsworth quote / Yo Mama joke. I need to thank Lucinda for opening the show, joining us for the babble, and helping a ton with the editing and formatting of the book. Obviously, I need to thank Heath for doing way more than he really gets credit for. I also need to thank Wesley and Dustin from Atheist Nomads, Bill and Susie from Barroom Atheists, Adam Reeks from the Herd Mentality Podcast, Tom and Cecil from Cognitive Dissonance, Cash and Love from Atheist on Air, and Mr. Q from Coronify Me, all of whom were kind enough to play an ad for our new book and deserve grandiose laudations for their altruism. But most of all, of course, I need to thank this week's most magnificent multicellular organisms, John, Torsten, Wayne, Stephanie, Andrew, Steve, Russ, Neil, and Jeff. John, whose intellect is so vast it makes the library at Alexandria look like an airport bookstore. Torsten, who cracked me the fuck up with the note on his donation. Well done, sir. Wayne, whose massive testicles are known to intergalactic races thanks to gravitational lensing. Stephanie, who can now add Scathing Atheist's first Patreon donor to her Herculean list of accomplishments. Andrew, whose voice is so sexy it's been rated by the MPAA. Steve, whose penis is measured in parsecs. Russ, who could fuck Godzilla up worse than Roland Emmerich. Neil, who would never have let Darth Vader get away with talking about his mama like that. And Jeff, who can break stones with his fist and break fists with his stone. These nine noble non-believers achieved archived immortality this week by giving us money, many of them by utilizing our convenient new Patreon page. If you'd like to join their coveted ranks, you can donate to us at patreon.com/scathingatheist and make a per-episode donation that gets you all kind of goodies. Or you can make a one-time donation by clicking the donate button on the right side of our homepage at scathingatheist.com. That's all the blasphemy we've got for you this week, but we'll be back in 168 hours with more, including the Esther poem that we didn't have room for this week. Between now and then, check us out on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and YouTube. If you love us as much as we love you, please leave us a 5-star review on iTunes or wherever you like to leave podcast reviews. If you have questions, comments, or death threats, you'll find all the contact info on the contact page at scathingatheist.com. All the music used in this episode was written and performed by yours truly, and yes, I did have my permission.
I want to say ha-ha, Saurus.
Please say that.
The book starts with King Ha-ha, Saurus.
Yeah, that's great.
How shitty would 300 be if they had to call him Ha-ha, Saurus?